Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and I'm warning you, I'm a bit fired up this week, and I'm not sure if you're going to like everything I have to say, so buckle up. Coming up in the last call, I have to talk about Democratic National Committee Vice Chair David Hogg's announcement this week to support primary challengers against certain Democratic congressional incumbents who are, as he says, asleep at the wheel. You should see how Democrats are hounding Hogg on social media for doing exactly what a majority of the Democratic base is saying it wants. New leaders. I'll have more on that later on. Remember to follow me on Blue Sky, Twitter, the Facebook, the Gram, but also on the YouTube, since I'm posting many videos there, along with everything else that you are hearing on this podcast. I shared some clips from my discussion last week with labor writer Hamilton Nolan, and it got the most views I've ever received on my YouTube page. If you missed last week's show, please check it out because Hamilton cuts right through the smoke and mirrors by the Trump regime and MAGA Republicans and their claims, how they're all about the working class, how they are the real working class party when the Trump tariff con and their constant attacks on unions prove otherwise. So please subscribe to Left of Lansing on YouTube and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. And yes, as I always say, give it a 5-star review if you can. I'll accept 4, but I'd really like a 5-star review. And please let others know about the show so that we can help spread the progressive message across Michigan and the country. Okay, so we've got a few more Republicans running for governor next year. Former State Attorney General Mike Cox is running, announcing that his platform will be, get ready, make Michigan great again. Wow, Mike, how original. Nobody would ever think of coming up with a slogan like that. Frankly, how wimpy of Mike Cox to not be original. I mean, all he's got is stealing his dear leader's slogan for Michigan. Mike Cox, you sputtered out of the starter's gate with zero original thought or imagination. Hey, kind of like the entire MAGA Republican Party. Our friend John King from Michigan Advance noted this week that Mike Cox is the 5th Republican running for governor, along with Michigan Senate Minority Leader Eric Nesbitt, Congressman John James, of course, Genesee County truck driver Anthony Hudson, and Traverse City native Evan Space. Don't really know those last two guys, so we'll just say there are 3 running, but with John James in the mix and now Mike Cox, I guess you can take Eric Nesbitt out of the mix as well. Now, I am ashamed to admit that Mike Cox and I share a hometown since we both come from Redford Township, and I wonder if he remembers Clover Lanes on Schoolcraft Road. Yes, 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 I know. It was technically Livonia, but that's where my high school would bowl for our lifetime sports classes, and I was dominant, by the way. Or maybe I should say Beach Lanes because that was actually in Redford Township. Anyway, Cox recently joined always on duty Bill Schuette, the former MAGA Republican Attorney General, whose son is now in the State House, to chastise current Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel recently for allegedly using her own office to press her own political agenda. Cox and Schuette, they criticized Nessel at a recent sham hearing in the State House, and I loved when progressive Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagella pointed out their hypocrisy and how Mike Cox joined Republican efforts to strike down Obamacare, and also how Schuette defended Michigan's then ban on same-sex marriages when he was in office. Because you see, it's never, ever, ever political when MAGA Republicans are in charge, you see. Now, in that same hearing, Mike Cox went after Nessel for charging those 16 fake electors, including former Michigan Republican co-chair Michonne Maddock, as they tried to steal the 2020 election, which, again, you MAGA people out there, if you're saying that there was a massive steal happening right in front of all of us, that means any Republican who won the race in that election was also a fraudulent winner. Clowns. But Cox said that Nessel was in the wrong because she described those 16 electors as brainwashed by their dear leader. They were brainwashed. That's what a cult is all about. There was no evidence of any wrongdoing, but he said there was a fix. And so, of course, they will do whatever it takes. They will even go to jail for him. What do you think January 6th was all about? Mike Cox says it's not fair to describe cultish MAGA nuts as brainwashed because they truly, truly believed he won. Look, I truly believe Justin Rose should have won the Masters, and I think he got cheated. So they should just rip up that green jacket off Rory McIlroy's back and give it to Justin Rose. Now, for the record, Rory, I believe, deserved the title and won it fair and square. But you get my point. What Mike Cox is admitting is that MAGA Republicans can't tell right from wrong, and that is a major, major problem in this country. Hey, give Mike Cox credit. At least he's admitting it. But get ready, everyone, for the next 18 months or so, because between John James and Mike Cox spewing pro-Trump dribble nonstop, it'll be a cringe-inducing 2026 to see who can gain dear leader's attention. Now, meanwhile, our current governor, Democrat Gretchen Whitmer, continues to try to recover from her debacle of a meeting with dear leader Trump at the White House last week in the Oval Office. When I recorded last week's show, where I took the governor to task for looking absolutely weak and small as she stood in the corner of the Oval Office, I didn't even see that New York Times pic of her covering her face with her folder before meeting with dear leader. And it's so stunning. It is, because I thought Gretchen Whitmer always understood optics, but she doesn't. Trump and his people, they understand optics. It's always optics, optics, optics in politics. Guys, if you want to go back and listen to my shows from 2019 and 2020, and then when I pick back up here in 2023, you'll hear me laud Governor Whitmer for reaching out to young voters, for understanding the power of social media. But you'll also hear where I feel where she fell short of representing the people she got to vote for her. I mean, I did spend some of 2019 talking with guests like registered nurse and progressive activist Julia Pulver about Whitmer's massive failure in joining the Republican majority back then and passing that awful, awful, awful giveaway to insurance companies when she signed that so-called auto insurance reform bill. It didn't help the people one bit, and thousands of Michiganders now can't afford the cost to cover themselves or loved ones who suffered from devastating auto accidents. Not really a working-class agenda there. Not to mention the photos of her signing that bill on Mackinac Island with then-Republican Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield, who's facing felony embezzlement charges for allegedly using funds from his own foundation for personal use like trips, meals, paying off credit cards. I mean, that photo op was a disaster. And looking back in time, it looks even worse, especially in how that bill did not help thousands of Michiganders. But what was Gretchen Whitmer's reward for working with MAGA Republicans and high-end lobbyists in Lansing back then? Oh yeah, that's right. They held rallies against her at the Capitol during COVID. And Trump railed against her, of course, and she even had MAGA Republican nutjobs conspire to kidnap and kill her. I mean, you'd think she would have learned a lesson in never bending a knee towards these people, never showing one ounce of weakness, taking the battle to them, and most of all, taking the battle to dear leader Trump. But ever since he defeated Kamala Harris, Whitmer decided to shed her brand, what used to be her brand of being a true fighter, a working class fighter, and instead decided to go in the, I'll act like the adult in the room, work with an adjudicated rapist and felon and someone who completely has no regard for the United States Constitution while he surrounds himself with the most despicable corporate authoritarians and white Christian nationalists who care only about one thing, absolute power. Hey, we've gone this route of trying to elect people who act like the adults in the room, the technocrats. We've tried this route, and it has failed us time and time again as Trump, Musk, and tech bros and MAGA Republicans go on the warpath now to destroy Social Security, public education, essential government agencies, and, of course, the rule of law. It's why you're seeing now millions of people taking to the streets to protest the corporate autocracy that's taking over our government. And they're doing this without much help from the Democratic Party across the country, and especially here in Michigan. And yet, Governor Whitmer is nowhere to be seen at these rallies. Oh, She was seen at the White House begging Dear Leader for funding to block Asian carp from entering the Great Lakes and for additional funding for the Selfridge Air Base in Harrison. And she was also there ostensibly to try to talk him out of his tariff con. Now, maybe I'm a little short-sighted and I've been accused of worse, but is it worth it? I know. I watched the wise sages in Lansing Media from Tim Skubick's Off the Record last week lecture all of us of how wonderful and grown up it was of Whitmer to take one for the team and work on getting funding for these projects. Well, it hasn't happened yet. But I will say this. I get it. Showering Dear Leader with platitudes and praises might get something because we do know how he responds to that sort of stuff, but I'm sorry. I don't trust this clown, and I know that's not real breaking news. He hasn't lifted the tariffs, and how are we supposed to fight for an Air Force base here, Asian carp there, while the country is being torn apart? But as I said last week, what was the worst part of Gretchen Whitmer's visit for me was how it looked. And how she stood in the corner looking small while allowing MAG Republican House Speaker Matt Hall to take the lead in the entire appearance. Hall even criticized President Obama for supposedly allowing Asian carp in the Great Lakes. And while he was doing that, trashing Obama, Gretchen Whitmer stood there silently. Then Trump signed executive orders declaring to go after some of his political enemies, and she stood there silently. That woman from Michigan, the one who couldn't be pushed around, became nothing but part of the Oval Office tapestry to the delight of all of those Christian nationalists inside the regime. Oh, you know deep down they just loved it. Now, I've gotten some pushback from some of you out there who believe I'm way off base with my criticisms of Big Gretchen. I welcome the criticism and discussions that I've had with some of you. And again, I get it. She feels like being the so-called adult in the room is now her new brand. But while Rome burns, what the hell does it matter having an adult in the room who will just simply burn along with it? Funding for an airbase? I mean, is that worth all the groveling while refusing to stand up for those who will face massive cuts to Medicaid and Social Security? All because some strange billionaire like Elon Musk is allowing his people to pour through the personal data of millions of Americans? Is it worth it? Is it worth it while Dear Leader and Elon slash funding for places like Raven Hill Discovery Center in northern Michigan, where kids and families learn to connect through science and art? I mean, that center now will lose around $25,000 in federal funding as Elon and Trump gut some $65 million across the country for spending on the National Endowment of Humanities. We used to always value art in this country because that was a way that we could also say we believe in freedom. That's what freedom of speech is all about. And here's some more about these cuts. As Bridge Michigan reports, the Michigan Humanities Council lost the roughly $900,000 remaining of its $1.5 million annual federal operations grant, 90% of the organization's total budget. Among the initial casualties, the nonprofit is scrapping its annual Great Michigan Read, a statewide program that's offered free books and programming centered around a specific book related to Michigan each year since 2007. Isn't that just wonderful? Oh, I just love it. I mean, screw it. Do the kids really have to learn how to read when we've got Dear Leader to provide us with his usage of big words? Last week, I mentioned how Trump and Elon are busy gutting millions of dollars from a USDA program that gives schools and food banks money to purchase fresh produce from local small farmers across the state of Michigan. Remember, though, they're going to tell you, while they do stuff like that, they're really about the kids. They're really about the working class, and they're really about the farmers. And we haven't even touched how Trump's tariff con is costing Americans, especially Main Street Americans. Oh, and thanks to Dear Leader's demonization of our friends up north, some 900,000 less Canadians crossed the border compared to March of last year. I mean, isn't that wonderful? The Independent reports Canadians spent as much as $20 billion in the United States last year, which supported around 140,000 jobs, according to the U.S. Travel Association. Hey, but that's all gone. That's just fantastic, isn't it? That's great news for Michigan. How is that going to help Michigan, Governor Whitmer? How is that kind of move? How is the constant attacking of Canada by Dear Leader going to help our economy? Instead, you just stood there silently. Dear leaders, fast tracking, by the way, the Line 5 tunnel project, declaring it a federal emergency. Strange, it's not a federal emergency, but of course he did, because nothing says moving into the future of energy like keeping a 72-year-old pipeline alive so it can pump and transport Canadian oil under the Straits of Mackinac, and most of it then will go back to Canada. And the governor had nothing to say about it. Nothing at all. She's just remaining silent, like a houseplant. Even worse, the governor stood silent in that Oval Office corner last week, not even saying a word for the many international students who are facing deportations while they attend Michigan universities and colleges. Seven students, and maybe even more, from my alma mater of Central Michigan University are being targeted to leave. Over 20 University of Michigan students are being told to leave, and international students from other colleges and universities are being targeted. Even though they had student visas, they are now being revoked. The Trump regime's white Christian nationalists are going after these international students for two reasons. One, to harass, to bully, and to scare undocumented people, and also to wage war against our universities. And that's the part I don't get. Governor Whitmer has made gaining a post-high school degree of the utmost importance here in Michigan if the state is going to progress into the new technologies of the future, progress into the new economy of the future. And yet, at the same time, dear leader is attacking her very plan. They're bullying and scaring international students who not only help with science and research that will benefit the state and the country, but these students also add over $1 billion of economic activity, according to Global Detroit. And let's not forget, it was also former Republican Governor Rick Snyder who made it his mission to bring more foreign students to Michigan colleges and universities and to hopefully convince them to stay here and to work here, to grow families here. But that's gone, as Dear Leader and his regime attacked these students and forced them to leave if they had a minor offense, like speeding, or, even worse, if they dared participate in a protest. And it appears things are just going to get worse here, everyone, as we're seeing Trump and the federal government rounding people up and sending them to prison camps in El Salvador, even refusing to follow Supreme Court orders to bring Kilmer Abrego Garcia back home to Maryland after detaining and shipping him to a jail in El Salvador, despite there being no evidence that he was ever part of the MS-13 gang, as Trump and his underlings lie. And that's the thing. If a president can ignore court orders now without any kind of punishment, then we're talking about a scary, scary time for not only undocumented people in Michigan and the rest of the country, but we're in scary times for our democracy. I was talking with some coworkers earlier this week, and they were lamenting how one person proved how fragile our democracy really is. And that's true. And that's why I say it was beyond stupid and cowardly of the University of Michigan to end its DEI policies, because that only showed weakness and emboldened the Trump regime to push further and further and further. And this is why capitulating to MAGA on immigration was always a gross and disastrous mistake for the Democratic Party. Democrats and their consultants thought it was wise to debate this issue on the Republican turf, and that we would argue on their terms when it came to immigration. But it was never in good faith. Sure, everyone wants a secure border. Everyone wants to deport foreign criminals. But the underlying issue for these white Christian nationalists has always been about getting rid of all immigrants whom they consider to be anti-American. I mean, that's what the whole "they're eating cats and dogs" lie was all about. These mother effers want to deport undocumented people, and especially those in our universities, so that they can, as Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker said, remake these institutions in their own light. And that's part of this two-pronged strategy of going after international students here by these white Christian nationalists. And it's why you're also seeing the Trump regime use the IRS to go after Harvard after Harvard announced that it would no longer abide by the regime's anti-American and anti-DEI policies. And see, MAGA doesn't see this, though. They don't think clearly. Oh, great, they celebrate. Yeah, let's go after a liberal, which is funny. I mean, I don't think of Harvard being a liberal institution. But still, they say, yeah, let's go after all the universities. Which means that when a Democrat gets into office, that Democrat can go after religious institutions like Hillsdale College, for instance. Huh. And wait, you mean to tell me that the same Republicans who fought and debated many of us 20 years ago over the right of the executive branch to illegally detain and torture so-called suspected terrorists are now the same people celebrating and laughing with Trump for making people here legally suddenly disappear? Look, I like that Liz Cheney's on the side of democracy as we stand up against this totalitarian takeover, but come on. She used to tell me and you out there how the executive branch should have all the authority imaginable to detain and torture people. And suddenly now, people like Liz Cheney and other Republicans back then say that they're caught off guard, that someone would someday come along and further abuse the very power they fought for some 20 years ago. Meanwhile, Democrats didn't even put up really a big-time fight against all of that torture. There were no arrests. There were no indictments for those who engaged in such a thing. President Obama just said, we have to move forward. Well, everybody, moving forward, as Democrats normally do, is part of the reason why we are here. This is what happens when you remain silent, when our state and national leaders fail to rise to the challenge and seem to care more about their own future political careers rather than caring about the people. Because you know what happens? The people are the ones who suffer. We're in dangerous times, everyone, and I'm not sure we can just sit back, drink coffee, and say everything is fine while the house is burning down all around us. I know I'm not the first one to say this, but cowardice breeds cowardice. Coming up to talk a little more about the regime's attacks on Michigan's international student population and what it'll mean for these institutions and the towns they reside in is Julie Powers, Executive Director of Immigration Law and Justice Michigan. Stay tuned for that. Hey, everyone, am I right or am I misguided or both? Let me know, okay? You're listening to LOL.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here, and we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
Okay, as I already said before the break, the Trump regime is attacking colleges and universities in Michigan and across the nation in a number of ways, including the targeting now of foreign students. And as I stated in my lead up, the moves by Trump's people so far have affected students from the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Grand Valley State, Wayne State, I believe Oakland University, SVSU, Western Michigan, and of course, Central Michigan, as I talked about. And the reasonings for these cancellations of student visas vary, including for minor crimes such as DUI or having an argument with a roommate. And of course, some seem to be connected to pro-Palestinian protests on campuses recently. And like I said, this is another in a line of attacks against both the undocumented community, but also higher education. So joining me to talk more about what's happening about this and some other items is Julie Powers, Executive Director of Immigration Law and Justice in Michigan. Thank you so very much, Executive Director Powers, for being on Left of Lansing this week. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Call me Julie.
All right, Julie.
I'm not fancy. I'm not fancy.
No problem. All right, well, as you heard, I mentioned my alma mater, CMU, in my open there. And according to CM Life, the student newspaper there, CMU officials discovered that several current and former international student records that were terminated without notice by the Department of Homeland Security recently. And the university president said that neither the university or the students were notified of the changes. And we're seeing similar stories, of course, being shared elsewhere. Was this on the radar of many advocates out there when Trump came back into the office that his administration would be targeting international students in the state? Or did this kind of catch some off guard?
Well, I think that it caught a lot of people off guard. However, as we have all realized, even some of the folks who maybe in the run-up to the election were supportive of the now president didn't believe a lot of the rhetoric that happened during the campaign. Felt like it was a lot of saber rattling, a lot of, you know, firing at the base, and stump speeches are where hyperbole is born, practically. So there were a lot of things that were said, especially, but at no point, as far as I could tell, or any of us could tell, were international students mentioned, because I think that this is happening nationally. This isn't just Michigan.
Right.
There are 38,000 international students at Michigan colleges and university, not just at our land grant state schools, but we're also talking colleges and universities that are private or faith-based. So this is actually affecting others. I actually graduated from Alma College just a few miles down the road from your alma mater, and this is affecting them as well. Now, the numbers are going to be smaller and they're not as much of a radar. I mean, there's like 1,200 students, 1,400 students on campus. So, you know, it's just a matter of thing. But this wasn't specifically on our radar screen, although I do know that a lot of students, especially international student organizations, were wary after the election and coming back in January for the next term. There were a lot of conversations happening online in forums, and we were getting calls about from folks asking if they should return to the U.S. to complete their education. And since at that time, all of their statuses were fine, as you said, there was no notice. So now we're dealing with the fallout, which is a lot of students are terrified. And some of the students who've had their status revoked, had their visas revoked, have no reason. There's no reason given. There's nothing in the system that says what happened. The universities didn't hear anything about it, nor did the students. So we're still a little bit up in the air as to what's happening. Fortunately, the students at the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Wayne State, Central, and the bigger schools, they have offices of international students, and they're providing support to those students, either to help them leave the country or to petition to get themselves reinstated in a timely manner. But think about it. This is a revenue stream for our universities and colleges. 38,000 students who are paying full freight to attend our colleges and universities. They are a huge part of the ecosystem of the communities in which these schools are located. And a lot of these students are grad students, and they're driving really important research in a variety of areas. So what's going to happen to research that gets truncated because half of your research team can't come back to the country? So I think this is going to put a lot of pressure on colleges and universities across the country.
You mentioned how many international students we have here in the state. And I think I read somewhere, and you could correct me, I think I read that it's around, I don't know, something like $1.4 billion that students will spend on, these international students spend on tuition. Let's see. I've got it right here. Yeah, tuition, rent, groceries, clothes, movies, restaurant meals, school supplies, and other things that they purchase. And this is according to a Global Detroit study. So this is also, like you said, an attack not just on the students, the universities, but it's also it is an attack on the cities and the towns where these universities and colleges reside.
Absolutely. And a lot of the tactics that the administration is using are things that cause people to be concerned and anxious, but is also having a chilling effect on free speech. Given that there's been rhetoric and there have been communications made to people who were born and raised in the United States and are U.S. citizens, informing them that their parole has been revoked and they need to get out of the country in 7 days. So there are a lot of mistakes that are being made in the process of truncating these visas. I also want to point out something that folks don't always talk about, which is that international students, obviously, they're an economic driver, just like you said, and our friends at Global Detroit did an impeccable job in that study in analyzing the economic impact. But most international students are still, you know, they're young adults, they're kids. And so you've got a 19-year-old or a 22-year-old. And while they are legally and technically adults, they're not completely adult yet. And we're basically terrorizing very, very inexperienced adults. They're getting their visas yanked for, you know, maybe they went out with their friends and had a beer and got in trouble, behaved inappropriately. What's appropriate in their culture and in their community? I mean, you know, our drinking age at 21 is very different from how it is in other countries where those students are now coming to the U.S. Maybe they're driving and they commit a moving violation. I live in Lansing. Trust me, I have been on the road and seen the very fancy cars being driven by international students who drive too quickly, blow stop signs or blow red lights, and it happens. These are immature adults. And so sometimes they do dumb things. I know I am ever grateful that the internet did not exist when I was in college. So I think that they're looking for ways to get rid of a handful of people in order to quell things like rallies, protests, op-eds, action to support international students, having an opinion on Israel versus Palestine, having an opinion on how immigrants, refugees, asylum seekers, and unaccompanied refugee minor children are treated. Having opinions and not being a U.S. citizen can get your visa revoked now. It is very, very concerning, and it is having a chilling effect on the international communities.
So, of course, you know, obviously, we know how this administration's policies are against undocumented workers and undocumented people in the country. But on this front, are they using international students as, do you see it as their overall goal, as another way to attack higher education and to do, I think it was the Illinois governor yesterday or the other day, Pritzker, he was saying, so that way they hope that they can make these universities in their images. Mm-hmm. And so they're using these students as a way to do that?
Yep. Honestly, I mean, Hillsdale University, their Heritage Foundation, they're behind Project 2025. This is homegrown white nationalism. And so that's where it stems from. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I have a bunch of lawyers who work for me and legal professionals. But what I can tell you is I've been around the nonprofit sector and I've been in the state for a really long time. And they want to try and shape higher education is turning out scientists and big thinkers and political analysts. Look at what they just did. They've been doing to Columbia. It is a nonstop attack on Columbia University because Columbia University was refusing to bend. And now Harvard got into it. But, you know, Harvard said, bet. I mean,
right.
And the thing is that a lot of these colleges and universities do have the resources to stand up against the administration and chipping away at their independence and their ability to self-govern. But the administration wants to bring it all underneath this very totalitarian regime. And I'm using strong words like totalitarian. They're trying to bring it under one umbrella that is tightly controlled by the administration and the loyalists who put the president in office. This has been a plan for a long time, and a lot of people didn't believe that it was going to happen. I, unfortunately, have had the privilege of reading Project 2025 cover to cover twice, and it's written there. This is all part of the plan.
All right.
So I would just say to this, to our international students, I'm sorry.
All right.
I wish there were more I could do. I've testified. I've called. I have done everything in my own little tiny power that I have to try and protect the students who put their trust in our country and in our country's exceptional education system. And, you know, it feels like a betrayal of our international status in the world.
Like CMU, I think they put out statements saying, you know, that they are there for these students. But I guess what you just said goes to my final question. Is there anything universities can do this to stop these moves? I guess other than maybe lawsuits or something like
right.
that?
Right now, the only real way it seems to bend the opinion is filing lawsuits. I certainly would leave that. All of these universities have their own legal counsel, and there's a state association for higher education. And I would imagine these conversations are happening. I'm sure they're having conversations with the ACLU and others. But I will say this, litigation is one way. But the other piece of the equation is that all folks who are affected by this, whether you're an alumni, one of these, a college or university with an international student program, or if you were one or you have a connection, you got to let your elected officials know. Make your 5 calls every day to save democracy is what I tell my friends. And that's what I'm doing personally, is make those calls. Talk to all of your elected officials at the state and federal level. We got to keep the pressure on.
Julie Powers, Executive Director of Immigration Law and Justice, Michigan. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on with us this week. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. Have a great day.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
A special thanks to Julie Powers from Immigration Law and Justice, Michigan. To learn more about what they do, visit iljmi.org. And as I was recording, we had breaking news that the Democratic Party field for Debbie Stabenow's Senate seat just got a little bit bigger. Strong progressive and former Wayne County Health Director Abdul Al-Sayed is now entering the primary race against progressive State Senator Mallory McMorrow, and I have to tell you, I love it. Like, I've made no endorsement in this race, and I don't think I will, because I welcome this primary campaign. I like both Mallory and Abdul, and I think they can each express a strong, common sense, working class, progressive viewpoint and campaign. I'm wondering, though, will they split progressives in the state? I mean, we'll have to see, because we're waiting for so-called centrists like Congresswoman Haley Stevens to join the race at some point. And I will keep begging the question that I've asked so many people, including someone on social media this week after they described themselves to me as a moderate Democrat. Here's my question. What is a moderate, or what is a centrist? And as usual, whenever I ask that question, I never receive a response from anyone. I mean, former Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema was celebrated as a moderate. Oh man, did the Washington, D.C. political media circuit just love Kyrsten Sinema because she was a serious moderate person as she mocked working people across the country by giving a theatric thumbs down on raising the federal minimum wage. How's a radical stance like that considered moderation by some? And that gets me to this week's Left of Lansing Last Call. Democratic National Committee Vice Chair David Hogg is causing some blue MAGA types' heads out there to explode because he said something controversial. Well, wait, what did the 25-year-old say that was so controversial that would make so many Democrats upset? Did he call for the erasure of Harriet Tubman from government records? Did he engage in insider trading that many members in Congress seem to throw in all of our faces? Wait. Did he declare that married women must update all of their records in order to vote? No? Okay. Oh, wait. Did he declare that peeps were the bomb? Which they're not. Peeps are evil and they are disgusting. But no. He did not declare that peeps were the bomb. He didn't do any of those things. So what was David Hogg's so-called controversial statement? Oh, he and his Leaders We Deserve Political Action Committee are, for lack of a better word, committed to fund primary candidates against those Democrats in office who've either been there way too long or who've been asleep at the wheel. And come on, that's what we've all been talking about here for the past few months, ever since the election. All I've been hearing is how the Democratic base wants new leadership. They are tired of what Democrats have brought us over these last few years. They are tired that we were never able to get rid of Trump. They are tired of the consultants. They are tired of the feckless leadership of the Democratic Party. I mean, they are asking, where are the Democratic leaders to provide hope and a path forward out of this mess? A mess that we're in, thanks in part to Democrats and their rich and out-of-touch party consultants. They helped get us into this mess. Now, David Hogg said he wants to spend $20 million in safe blue Democratic primaries against sitting House members by supporting younger opponents. That's great. It gets people involved in their politics. It gets people involved in their state and local politics. It means that Democrats actually believe in something called, wait, what's that word again? Oh yeah, democracy. We've already seen two Democratic House members die in office this year. That just speaks to me that we need some youth and we need new leaders, because with Democrats sitting at 29% support in the country, 29% support in the country, that's not a real admirable spot to be in. And that's just not all MAGA voters who are saying that. A lot of that negativity comes from independent voters and Democratic base voters who see Democrats being weak, ineffectual, always playing defense, and losing elections while asking us for more and more money. Donations for what? To keep losing? So Democratic leaders can write strongly worded memos as Trump and Musk run rampant over our Constitution as they increase the power of the corporate authoritarian class? So what, Democrats can continue to make boring speeches and platitudes of standing up for the working class that continues to get decimated by the corporate elitists that are running both parties? Pointing a finger, Democrats, at Trump and saying, don't do that. As white Christian nationalists inside the regime defund education, make people disappear who don't agree with them, and ignore the courts, that's not helping. That is why Democrats are polling at 29%. It's there for a reason, people. These seats are not to be anointed. They're not just given to people where people can just say, all right, I don't have to worry about a primary. I don't have to worry about ever being held accountable, especially if I'm in a safe blue district. That's not what this is about. That's not democracy. That's why I celebrate McMorrow and El Sayed in the Democratic primary race. That's what a primary is supposed to be about. A battle over ideas, a battle over strategy, a battle over a vision. You are trying to give people a choice. More the merrier, I say. I mean, we've watched the weakness of Democrats time and again, and it seems like their only strategy is, well, things will get so bad, maybe then voters will just say, oh, let's just get Democrats back in the power. To do what? And the Overton window has been dragged so far to the right that Democratic leaders saying, we'll be the adults in the room and try to stabilize things. Really? Stabilizing things. Things are so far to the right wing right now, that's not a real message. Stabilize it where? just a little bit not as right. You wonder why AOC and Bernie are getting these huge crowds wherever they go across the country, because they're not only attacking Trump and Elon, but because they've identified a problem, the corporate oligarchy. And the people understand that's a root cause of why we are where we are today. These positions are not anointed to anyone. If your representative has done a fantastic job, they'll most likely win any primary, and just on name recognition alone. But the old way ain't working. And another thing, we see in the polls how younger voters are skewing more and more right-wing in a big and dangerous way. Democrats need to infuse some young, new, vibrant leaders inside the Democratic Party so Democrats are no longer viewed as the geriatric party that helped lead us down this very path. So I applaud David Hogg for doing the right thing. We're not just fighting against Trump's corporate authoritarianism. We're fighting against MAGA authoritarianism. It's not going away with Trump, everyone. It is here to stay. So it would be nice if Democrats would wake up to that reality and start getting people in there who will truly represent the working class and represent it without fear of MAGA Republicans.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Hope those of you who celebrate Easter have a happy one. And for those of you who recognize Easter as a way to celebrate the spring equinox and the warmer weather, I also hope you have a good one as well. Please email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com, and let me know what you think about everything that we covered this week. Thanks again to Julie Powers from Immigration Law and Justice Michigan for being on and for fighting for what is right. I mean, that's what progressivism is all about, fighting for what is right. And it's why progressive policies are popular with the people. So enjoy some chocolate eggs this weekend, and then let's get back into the fight for the future of the country next week. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.